This podcast replay is brought to you by KSDT CPA, one of South Florida's largest and one of the country's fastest growing accounting firms. KSDT CPA is a full service firm that also excels in crypto. Visit them at KSDTCPA.com or call 305-670-3370.
It is time, baby. Yes, sir. Let's unleash that wolf pack. How you feeling, man?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Got up early, got me a workout in, a nice 7 a.m. workout. Picked up some dry cleaning, hit some balls to the driving range. I've been productive this morning. I made some calls all before noon.
Damn. That's more than I do in a whole week. Nice job by you, bro. Wow.
It's not what I usually do. I'm trying to switch it up, man. I'm trying to take better care of myself.
That's fantastic.
All the travel I do, I eat crappy. I drink a lot.
Yeah, you don't eat as crappy as I do, obviously. Look at you. Look at me. Okay. So, no, it's a huge difference.
But I mean
huge. All right. So.
But here's the thing about it, right? I'm young. I'm 29, right? But my metabolism is not as fast as it used to be. So if I keep eating and drinking the way I am, I'm going to be bigger. So, you know, I gotta prevent that from happening.
I love that shit, dude. I could eat anything until I was about 21.
Yep.
And then I don't know what happened, bro. That elastic broke or something, that it just kept everything tight, and that's it. It was over. And then that's it. I eat something and it sticks with my ass like luggage forever, bro. It's just, it's brutal, man. Brutal.
My big vice, I don't eat a lot of sweets. My big thing is when I eat, I like steaks. So this past week I was in Detroit and I got me a nice 20 ounce cowboy ribeye with mac and cheese and had three drinks to go with it. And so I'm sure I gained 2 pounds alone with that one meal. And so that's usually my weekend after weekend. And so, you know, I got to do better at working out and eating better during the week. I'm not going to eliminate the weekends. I'm still going to drink and eat steaks on the weekend, most likely, or burgers or whatever. But I'll at least try to be a lot better in the week.
Speaking of steak, dude, now that you mentioned that, I've been having this hankering to go to Burn Steakhouse in Tampa to go have a little Chateaubriand. I think once the college football season ends this Saturday, maybe next Saturday, I'll get in the car with the wife and just take a ride to Tampa and hang out and have a little Burns, bro. God, that place is so good. That it's just worth the drive just to go to Burns.
Yeah. It's an awesome spot. I think last time I was in Tampa earlier this year, I did the Bucks Chiefs game on Sunday night. And I tried to get into Burns, but I got the assignment last minute, and so I couldn't get a reservation. And so I went to the other spot. There's another spot there that's actually pretty good
too. Sideburns.
Huh?
Sideburns. Is that where you went?
Is it Sideburns? I don't know if it's Sideburns.
Okay.
I can't remember. Let me think if I can think of it while we're talking. It may come to me. If it comes to me, I'll let you know. But yeah, I went to that spot last time in Tampa, and they had really good steak, probably like a B-plus steak. Not a Burns level, but I was pretty satisfied still.
Okay. So I like it. All right. Yesterday, McDaniel addressed the meteors. So let me ask you, now that we see the team at 7-3, you kind of know a little bit more about Buffalo. I don't look at any of the other teams in the division as a real threat. Mm-hmm. So what would you put the percentage on the Dolphins winning the division now?
I'd say it's close to 50-50. Honestly, like I think that there's a game, I think week 15, correct me if I'm wrong, or week 14, the Buffalo, Miami game back in Buffalo. I think that's the AFC East championship game. I think more likely than not, whoever wins that game wins the division. The Jets showed us they don't have the offense, at least in my opinion, to be able to hang to the end. The Patriots also have shown us all year they don't have the offense. Two defensive-led teams, they're going to be in the mix for the wild card, but I think the division comes down to Miami or Buffalo. Buffalo is not looking like the world beater that a lot of people thought they were going to be. Like, even this week against the Browns, I was at that game. You know,
there were moments that Browns had a chance to get into that game. Dare I say that Jabroni played a good game, and they actually dropped some passes that would have made a difference in that game.
They dropped several passes that Bills offense really struggled in the first half. They had a whole, I think until like the 20 seconds left in the second half, Stephon Diggs didn't even have a single target And so
I know he was crying. Yeah. He was crying like a little bitch by halftime there next to his coach. Oh, come on, coach. He can't throw to me. He doesn't find me. And then finally in the second half, the baby got his lollipop.
So the interesting part about that is I actually interviewed Stephon Diggs, the post-game interview, and I asked him, I'm like, hey, you know, what happened in that conversation, essentially? And he was like, well, coach always knows how to say the right words to get us back, you know, at the right mindset. And so, you know, Stephon Diggs has had his emotional periods. And so you got the offense is struggling. He's not getting the ball. Clearly, Sean McDermott said something.
Did he have a bib on when he was answering those questions?
Everybody's got their own personality, right? And so Stephon Diggs is a really good receiver, but he does have his quirks. You know, he's one of those receivers where, and a lot of receivers in the league are like this, by the way, if you don't get them involved early, you run the risk of losing them for the whole game. They might like check out, you know, it's like, hey, this is not my game, you know, so I'm going to check out. And so they threw him a touchdown pass, like maybe 5 minutes, not even five game minutes, like five literal minutes after this camera showed him and McDermott on the end zone. And so whatever it was worked. That being said, I think that, you know, I can see the Bills or the Dolphins winning this division. The one thing I will say, that Bills defense, Amari Cooper went off on them this past game. Justin Jefferson went off on them the week before. And so they've got to fix that in a hurry, or Tyreek and Jaylen Waddle are going to put up, you know, video game numbers, when they play in December. And so right now the Dolphins are in first place based on their tiebreaker. Obviously, if the Bills win that evens things out. And then, you know, you got a little bit more complex tiebreakers, but I'd say probably 50-50 on Dolphins Bills, because I think that game will end up being a 50-50 game in Buffalo.
All right. So many said the first 2 years that the Dolphins made a mistake drafting Tua Tagovailoa. They shouldn't have drafted Tua. Maybe they should have drafted Herbert. Maybe they should have drafted somebody else, period. So those were the absolutes without even watching really play much and play with the right things around him. Okay, so now let's spin it. Have the New England Patriots made a mistake now that you have watched Mac Jones for 2.5 years?
I was never super high on Mac Jones. In fact, I remember talking to some of my colleagues who are a little bit more in the take game than I am. I'm more of a straight line reporter. But I was like, why is there such an assumption that Mac Jones has arrived? Like there's so many questions on these young quarterbacks, right? Tua had a bunch of questions. Justin Fields, Jalen Hurts, right? And some of them were unfair, but some of them were fair. Some of these guys hadn't truly proved it. But Mac Jones, it seemed to be, he was anointed. He was a Pro Bowl quarterback. The Patriots were good. They found their answer. And I just never got that. And so I've always been the guy where I think that we make hard line stances too soon. I think people made up their mind on Tua way too soon. And on the other side of it, they made their mind on Mac Jones being way too high too soon.
The next Tommy boy. He's the next Tommy boy.
And so I'm not – I don't think that, you know, I think that Zach Wilson is on his final legs as a Jets quarterback. I don't think that – I don't think the Patriots are going to ready to give up on Mac Jones yet. I haven't gone to that extreme. But I do think that he hasn't solidified himself as their franchise quarterback for sure. That defense is leading that team. And I think if you ask anybody – it was different a year ago. But if you ask anyone today, I'd say that they take Tua over Mac Jones, when I think this time last year the national narrative was – by far, Mac Jones over Tua.
Yeah, I'm with you. I wasn't that big a Mac Jones guy either. I wasn't impressed with him. And I wasn't impressed with Zach Wilson either. I'm sorry. I certainly wasn't impressed. Every time I hear somebody talk about his stupid-ass workout, which is the same shit they did with Jamarcus Russell. But damn, at least with Jamarcus Russell, I saw at LSU him do some stuff, you know. But the workout meant nothing to me. And Zach, you know, at BYU, you know, I think he only played like one decent team that year, and he lost that team. And he didn't have a good game that day. I think it was Coastal Carolina, which was like the best opponent he played that year. To me, Zach was never impressive in that sense. And that's – so it's interesting to see how, you know, a couple years in for one guy and what is it? Is it 2 years for one and 1 year, 1.5 year for the other one, right? Something like that.
So Mac Jones is in his second year.
Right.
Mac Wilson, too. They're both in
that's
the
right.
Year.
Both second year. Yeah. That's right. Both second
year. Tua's third year. He was in the Herbert Burrow class. And Zach Wilson, Matt, Trevor Lawrence were all in the same in same class with Justin Fields.
Yeah, I think they'll both be searching for, you know, another quarterback. And the other thing is, you know, you think about that kid, how he doesn't know how to handle things. And I'm talking about Zach. Imagine him having to handle the situation Tua was in for the first 2 years with that coach.
Yeah.
My God.
I think it's completely different, but I do think you bring that up. And I wonder if there are some parallels in that they're both Saleh and Flores, different guys completely, right? But defensive-minded head coaches who probably have a quick switch on what they may perceive as struggles or the quarterback not ascending their situation, right? Flores, for all his flaws, his thing was, oh, I've been with Brady for 15 years, and so your quarterback should be able to bail you out of everything, right? Which there's not a lot of Brady's. Saleh, there's only one, actually. Whereas Saleh, like, Wilson has played worse than Tua ever played. Like let's get that straight.
No, it's not even close.
Yeah, like, as much as people criticize Tua, I never thought that Tua was bad at any point last year. He just had some things he had to improve on, and obviously the team around him had a lot to improve on as well. Zach Wilson's been straight bad at some points this season, and obviously his lack of accountability did not help in the post game. Essentially, do you feel like you let the defense down? No. Why? Even if you don't feel like that personally, you know what the cliche. You guys are cliche monsters, quarterbacks.
Right.
This is your perfect cliche. You know, yes, I could have played better. The defense played great. I'll try to pick him up next time. Even if you don't want to take the complete blame, that's a much better answer than no. And, you know, so the accountability along with his play, I think he said it was windy as hell. You just don't bring up these excuses and responses, so it doesn't help his play. Now, I'm not going to be, you know, one-sided. I do think that quarterbacks need more time to fully answer if they're the guy or not. But I think that Zach Wilson speeding up his timeline with his mouth just as much as his play.
Yeah, and the difference also is Flo literally did not want Tua. I don't think that's the case with Saleh. He's just, maybe he doesn't believe in the kid anymore, but it's not like on draft day he was telling him, no, I don't want that guy. I want somebody else. That's the difference in that. I would hate to see that kid. If I see him fold like a cheap tent now, I can't imagine how he would have to deal with the 2 years. And again, if you're a Dolphins fan, you got to be blessed to have Tua, man, because he is mature beyond his years, and he has already been through hell that most quarterbacks never would go through. So he's kind of been tested already as a young starting quarterback to have that kind of soap opera to, you know, be drafted into. So that, to me, that part is impressive for Tua. When I watch the way Zach Wilson carries himself and I watch the way Tua carries himself, it is night and day, dude. Night and day. You got to appreciate that.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things that people didn't understand with Tua, even when he was going through some of that stuff, is his ability, his toughness, right? Everybody always thinks of toughness. One, it's physical, which I've never questioned his physical toughness, but people said, oh, he's injured, so he's not tough, right? One,
it's stupid.
Injuries don't define toughness. Second of all, there's mental toughness. It's also different than physical toughness, right?
Yes.
And I think this dude showed incredible mental toughness. And the problem that I think a lot of quarterbacks have, and I don't know Zach Wilson personally. I don't cover that team on a regular basis, so I can't say definitively. But a lot of these quarterbacks, especially younger guys, come up and they've never really had failure. You know, they've been the guy their whole career. You know, they've been this guy. They've been a top five pick. It's all going great. And then something happens, and it's like, I can't be the reason.
Right.
Do you know who I am? You know, I've been him. I've been him my whole life. Like, it's got to be somebody else. No, it's not on my shoulders. And so I think that lack of accountability sometimes, which we've seen from Zach at sometimes, hurts your development. Because one, if you don't think you're ever the issue, how are you going to get better?
Right.
If you don't think you're the reason why your team is struggling, then you're not going to put in extra steps to be great. And second of all, sometimes your teammates just need to hear it. You know, even if it's a cliche and you don't believe it, sometimes your defense needs to hear, you know, the defense really played great today. They played great enough to win, and we didn't do enough on our job. I didn't do enough on my job, and I'll be better next time. You say that, even if you struggle,
right,
the defense is going to be like, okay, we're behind him. We're behind him. You know, he's taking accountability. He's going to try to be better. We're behind him. You say no, some guys in there, you know, we've seen it. They like some Twitter posts, and then they had to apologize and be like, I didn't mean it. Did they mean it? I think they meant it.
Yeah, that's and it's only going to get uglier for that kid there, man. In New York, whoo, doggy, that he better shape up quickly, or it's going to get really, really, really crazy in New York with that kid.
And I will say this, like, the one thing I haven't loved a lot, and Dolphins fans may be upset with me on this, whatever, is that a lot of Dolphins fans have, like, taken the stance of, oh, well, Tua got criticism, so why has this quarterback got as much as this and that, and doing the whataboutisms thing? I will say, I watched some sports talk shows today. They are crucifying, rightfully, but they are crucifying Zach Wilson today.
Yeah, but I think what they're trying to say is, even when they were winning, he wasn't doing shit in those games. And for Tua, he wouldn't get credit for anything at times. Right. And yet the Jets were getting all the love, and Zach was getting all the love and all that kind of stuff. And it's misleading, because if you really watch the games, he really wasn't doing much in those games, you know, overall. And then we look at Kyler Murray. Brother, what have you done?
Yeah.
What have you done? Have you ever had a stretch as a quarterback like Tua has had? At any point in your career? No, not at all.
Well, Kyler has had some heavy sparks. But the thing about Kyler's game and Tua's game, and this is where I think a lot of Dolphins fans are right, a lot of people get caught up in the aesthetically pleasing element of the game, right? And so Kyler has a lot of technical flaws, and he misses a lot of throws that people criticize Tua on. But his game is quote-unquote sexier for the national public, because he runs, he can make people miss, he can throw the ball 70 yards, and he can make jukes in the open field and run for 100 yards in the game. Tua's probably never going to run for 100-plus yards in the game. That's just not his game. We don't want that.
He won't get 100 yards in three games, bro.
Exactly. And so because of that, I think people give Kyler breaks, and he also plays in a smaller market as well. But from really this whole last year, from the contract stuff, from the film watching stuff, to the fact that I think this team is 5-12 over the last 17 games, the Arizona Cardinals are, I think that Kyler Murray should be getting a lot more questions than he has been. And the reality is, the Cardinals are committed. They just gave him this big 5-year, 200-plus, you know, million-dollar contract. And so just like the Broncos or Russell Wilson, you don't have to figure it out. And I think that both teams may have to end up moving on from their coach at some point. And the reality is, the quarterback might be the bigger issue.
Yeah. No, and Mac Jones last year, dude, his year was like, he was like a facilitator. He was like a game manager. They made it sound bigger than what it really was. And I think that that's what goes on with Tuanon, is that they see other guys kind of get a pass or kind of get a break. Or look, Justin Herbert, dude. They make every excuse possible for Justin Herbert. Yep. Yet the bottom line is, do you win? No. Like, how many of these great performances do you have at the end of games to lift your team? Rarely ever. You're constantly throwing fourth quarter interceptions. If he had as many pick sixes in the fourth quarter of losses, if Tua had those four that he has already in his career, they would assassinate Tua. Tua has one, and it happened in a win against the Jets. This guy has four and has several other interceptions, like he did the other night in the fourth quarter when you had time to get into field goal range. And yet Justin Herbert, brother, gets every break. And again, it's what you said. He looks sexy. You know, he's got the golden locks. He runs like a deer. He throws the ball 800 miles an hour. He can throw it out of the stadium. He's the perfect physical specimen that you have ever seen at quarterback. I get all of that. But where's the production, bro? Where is the money? You know, some guy was crying to me. Well, no, they've got a bunch of people injured right now. He doesn't have a lot of weapons. I'm like, well, wait a minute, dude. He has Keenan Allen there last night. He had Palmer, who had over 100 yards. And Eckler's been a better running back than anything Tua has ever had in his entire career. And he's had him there for his entire career. Hell, I heard on Sunday night, he has the most touchdowns as a running back since 2019, which I was floored to realize that. And it's like, you still have better weapons than Tua did in his first 2 years. So what's the deal, bro? Where are you? And that's what I think Tuanon goes through, that their guy gets trashed, and then everybody else gets every break in the book. And Justin Herbert is, dude, the ultimate golden child of the NFL. It's amazing.
Yeah. So, like I said, I don't necessarily subscribe to the fact that this guy should get criticism because this guy did. I think that if, like I said, if Dolphins fans felt like Tua got too much criticism, which I think is a right view to have, then I would think the thought would be that you shouldn't levy quarterbacks with other quarterbacks with same criticism that early. But maybe people have different views. Like I said, I get it. To me, that particular game, like I watched the Chargers-Chiefs game, Justin Herbert wasn't the reason they lost. He actually had a pretty solid game in my view. But there is a, you know, he didn't win the game. And so I think people got a little ahead of themselves when they're putting Justin Herbert and the Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen before he's had his struggles this year.
Oh, I lost my shit when Joe Shad called him great. I was like, what? Like, he put him right next to Rodgers. Right. I was like, what? And I lost it right there with Joe Shad.
But I will say Justin Herbert, I think.
Oh, you broke up.
You know, he obviously makes a lot of great throws, and he's been good this year. I think out a way to consistently win those late games despite some of the issues they may have. Like you said, they've had Mike Williams and Keenan Allen gone for the last most of the year. But as we've talked about, if you're going to be one of those elite quarterbacks, you find a way to make do even with your situations. And so I think that's the next level for Justin Herbert. Now, that being said, I don't think that he is owed a bunch of criticism just because, you know, Tua got some. That's my view.
No, I just like, well, listen, on Sunday night, he can't take him to the field goal. And I got to tell you, if Tua's in that same position, they're ripping him for not being able to put him in field goal range. And that's what I'm saying. It's just he doesn't get the same level of criticism when he's put in the same. I still have people complaining about the Tennessee game last year.
Yeah. That was a bad game. That was an awful game. But yes, it was one game that was
okay. It was an awful game, but there was a reason also why it was awful, right? Because the coaching staff actually ran the ball in the first half in the rain, and then all of a sudden in the second half, they're like, "Nah, let's not give it to Duke Johnson. Those 60 yards were a fluke. Let's throw the ball." Meanwhile, Tannehill and company, what's Vrabel doing in the rain? Running the ball. You know what I mean? It's like it was.
Vrabel's going to run the ball anywhere.
I know, but in the rain, at least.
You find him on the sun, you find him on the moon, you find him in the sea or in land. He'll run that ball with Derrick Henry.
I'm with you. By the way, 16 touchdowns and 7 interceptions is not as impressive as Tua.
Right, but here's my thing is, and like I said, there's a lot of stuff that's said on national TV and debate shows that I may not be privy to, so maybe some of this is right. I think the main focus for Dolphins fans, honestly, should be celebrating Tua's great year. If I was a Dolphins fan, which I am not, but I cover the team a lot, I would be more focused on our team's great year, the fact that Tua and Pat and Tyreek are having, you know, excellent chemistry immediately. Mike McDaniel looks like the right coach. That would be my focus, not across the sea and like, Herbert's not been as good as Tua this year, so why isn't sports media killing him? That would just not be my focus. Like,
But you're not a fan. You're not a fan. You don't care about the Dolphins. Your team is not. You're not the Dolphins. You don't bleed aqua and orange, bro. This is not like your team that you were a kid. So then these people love the team. Then they love their draft pick. And then the kid gets killed for 2 years. And then he finally gets the help that he needs, and he gets this sore. And then the guy that they were comparing him to the entire – because that's all the two-and-on heard. Oh, you should have drafted Herbert, should have drafted Herbert, should have drafted – well, wait a minute. Hold on a second. This guy wins way more than Herbert. He beat Herbert. He's outplaying Herbert this year now that he has talent, because Herbert had the talent the first 2 years and still couldn't outplay Tua overall in wins or in head-to-head. So now he's winning, and so now you guys aren't going to, like, pick on Herbert and say that Tua should have been the pick? And so I think that's what it is what's – They don't hear the same thing the other way that they heard for their guy. And again, the difference is you say, I wouldn't be focused on that. but you're not a fan of the Dolphins. Yeah, you don't. You haven't been following the Dolphins for years. You haven't been suffering with the Dolphins for decades. That now you finally are getting out of the abyss.
I will say I covered 5 years, so I had some suffering myself.
Right, but it's not the same. It's not the same. It's brother. How did you feel when the Phillies lost?
I was hurt. I was hurt, but I was proud of them. I was proud of them.
But you were hurt.
Yes. Yes.
You were hurt.
Yes, but you're always going to be hurt when your team loses.
Right. Okay. You know? But see, the Dolphins aren't going to hurt you. That you understand? Yeah, everybody else was hurting their guy. That's their team. They're the left tackle for Tua. So that's it's a little more personal for them.
I completely understand. I completely understand fandom. Trust me, I am an irrational fan when it comes to my team. So I understand fandom.
I'm in the middle, bro, because I'm media, but I'm open about it. I'm a fan of all my teams. I'm born and raised in South Florida, man. So how am I not going to be? I've been a Dolphin fan since I was a child. The first thing that I ever learned about sports was the Miami Dolphins. So I'm always going to be a Dolphins fan. Is it going to stop me from telling you this is a bad draft pick or that's a bad coach or this? No, it's not going to stop me from doing that. Okay? Yeah. But I will feel the pain that they feel because I have felt the pain the same way.
Yeah. No, I get it. Like I said, and I would never tell fans how to react or how to respond because I think that's the cool thing about fandom. You can take it however you want, right? I'm just giving my perspective that this is a historic season for a couple of your star players. And the idea, right, as every fan, and I say this for my Phillies, right, is that this continues for decades and decades. And you started, but the reality is it doesn't always work this way, right? The Phillies just made it to the World Series, and I hope they make it back. Back and back next year, but the reality is that could be their ceiling. They may never go past with this core again. I hope I'm not speaking out of
turn. You got Dombrowski, bro. You got Dombrowski.
I understand that's a possibility. And so I enjoyed the heck out of that playoff run and I celebrated and I did that. And so I was hurt, but I still enjoyed it. And I'm hopeful, but I know that could not. And so that's why I just encourage, I can't tell you what to do, but I encourage Dolphins fans to enjoy this ride. Because of the pain they've had in the past, right? You know how hard it is to have a season like this where your quarterback is in the MVP conversation, where your receiver is in chances to break a NFL historic receiving record, where your coach is probably a coach of the year candidate and that you have a chance to win a division you haven't won in 13 years, right? You hope to do this many, many years, but there's no guarantee.
No.
So I would just say my view, like I said, I can't tell you what to do, but I would just say, enjoy the ride.
Yeah, I think they're enjoying it. I think they just want to enjoy a little extra by burying somebody along the way.
I get it.
They're just hoping the body doesn't come back up in Lake Mead. You know, that's all. They just want to keep it down after they bury it. All right, follow him on Twitter at Cameron Wolf. Catch his work there at the NFL Network. What are you working on this week, my friend?
Yeah, I'm actually going to I think today the Dolphins are having a few Thanksgiving charity celebrations. So I'm going to go see them giving out some turkeys at a couple of different places. And then tomorrow I'm going to be on TV from the Dolphins facility. I've been kind of around the world the last couple of weeks covering a few different teams. So get to see the Dolphins, see some Wednesday practice, hear from Tua and McDaniel and talk a little bit on TV about this team. I won't be in Miami this weekend for the game. Thank the Houston Texans for that. I'll be in Jacksonville for the Ravens game, but I think I'll be in Miami a bunch over the last month of the season.
South Florida, Jacksonville. Wow.
Yeah. I'm just happy. I'm just happy that I'm in Florida because
I got to call the people spared. At the NFL Network. They're not treating you well. That's just not right.
I got spared because I was supposed to go to the 6 feet of snow in Buffalo. Oh. And it was so bad that they had to move the game to Detroit,
right.
And I got in a dome. And so I had a lot of colleagues that were a little bitter, saying they finally sent you somewhere that was cold outside of Florida, and somehow you got your way moving to a dome.
That's it.
And I'm like, hey, man, I must be living right.
They want what do they want to die? Do they want you to die by going to Buffalo?
I think a lot of them deal with cold. Exactly right. You should want me to be happy, right?
There's a difference between being cold and putting your life on the line. I mean, exactly. You know, come on, exactly. Bro. Exactly. Jesus, have a heart, man. Jesus.
A lot of them cover cold games, and then they span. They, you know, we do the whips around, and so they go to this guy in Chicago, this guy in New York, this guy in Philly, and it's like, let's go to Cam, where it's 75 degrees in the middle of November. And so they want to see me wear a coat instead of some fun suit color for once. And so they will have to wait at least a couple weeks.
enjoy Jacksonville, my brother. We will catch up later on in the week, man. Thank you as always.
Absolutely.
You got it. Follow him on Twitter at Cameron Wolf. And by the way, when we talk about KSDT CPAs, they do it all, folks. We've been telling you about KSDT for a while now, for almost a year now. Forensic accounting, business valuation, management advisory services, healthcare advisory, property management, wealth management. They do it all. They can help your business grow. Maybe you're wondering, financially, what's going to go on? What's going to go on with the markets now? How it's going to affect my business? What should I plan ahead? They can help with all of that, from estate tax, family business tax, payroll management issues, you name it. They do assurance, accounting services, you name it, assurance. And when we talk about internal audits, they can help you with that. When it's audits of employee benefit plans, audits of financial statements, you want to make sure everything is the way it's supposed to in your business. That way, when people need to count on certain benefits, that they're there for you. So make sure to call the great people at KSDT CPAs, 305-670-3370. Your business is in Dade, Broward, or Palm Beach counties. They can help you. Personally, you want to get your taxes fixed, you want to do it right. They've also got crypto experts too. 305-670-3370. The Wolf Pack has been unleashed. This podcast replay is brought to you by EJDConstruction.com. Call Eric at EJD Construction at 305-433-4843. They do it all, residential or commercial. EJDConstruction.com is the custom home builder and general contractor you can trust. 305-433-4843. All right. There he is.
What's up, Bo? How you feeling?
I'm feeling good, bro. I had a crap ton of turkey in me. It was great, dude, last night. The old lady knocked it out of the park. Rice and beans. I like this fried sweet potato that she does every year. And it's one of my favorite things about Thanksgiving that she does. So, and it was relaxing, just hanging out with the family, watching the games.
Yep.
Watching the Lions be the Lions again, all those kind of things. So,
yep, close, but not close enough, right?
Bro, on third and one, you got to know you have Jared Goff. You don't go for a deep shot, bro. You complete a short pass. You give it to Williams. Like I was saying, you want to develop a culture and you want to say you're a good franchise. You don't trade T.J. Hockerson.
Yeah.
You have Jared Goff, bro. He needs T.J. Hockerson. He needs a stud that makes his life easy. And what you had to do was chew up the clock, make Buffalo use their timeouts. If you're going to kick a field goal, you're going to kick a field goal with 2 seconds left. You're not giving Josh Allen the ball back. And, you know, if you have an elite quarterback, then you take that deep shot because you have an elite quarterback. But Jared Goff at no time has ever proven to you to be an elite quarterback. It's just ridiculous. And the clock management, the roughing the passer penalty was just incredibly stupid on that Buffalo drive. There's just the Lions were the Lions.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah. So I think this is clearly a team that, you know, that's not ready to win.
Gritty. Gritty.
And they won a few games in a row and people got to look excited about them. And maybe they're closer to the, you know, closer to turning a corner, but that shows you how you, you know, what good teams do and what bad teams do.
Are you old enough for the Wayne Fonts years?
No.
Okay. That's, yeah. God damn, no. Dude. I'm so old.
I'm a youngin',
bro. God damn it, bro. I realize how time has flown, bro.
Bills were giving them every opportunity. The Bills have, by the way, not played very great football over the last 3 or 4 weeks. They're going through some things offensively. Obviously, they lost Von Miller for some time with the injury, which is a huge, huge injury. And so this is a team that, although they're 8-3, they've had some vulnerabilities. And two straight weeks, the Browns had them early in the first half where they were hanging around. And, you know, if you don't put the Bills away, they'll find a way at the end, you know, like they did this past week. And so the Lions, the Bills gave the Lions every opportunity to pull the upset. win a game on Thanksgiving, and the Lions didn't want
to
take it.
So. And let me just add to the Tuanon facts there. Josh Allen, 24-42, 253, two touchdowns and interception against the Lions. Tua Tagovailoa, 29 of 36, 382 yards, three touchdowns, and no interceptions against the same defense. So, so suck on that, haters out there. by the way, just want to run this by you because, again, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, I'm a nutbag saying, hey, you got to fire Tannenbaum and Gase and put Chris Greer in place. And I'm a nutbag like, oh, you're an idiot. Chris Greer's been part of the problem for 15 years. And I'm like, no, he's not. They don't listen to him. He just files his reports. He gives his suggestions. And he sits back and they don't pay attention to him. So he's not the problem. And he's proven it. Tua, obviously, everything that's, you know, gone on. But, you know, I don't know, about a year ago, somebody said, now's the time to get off the ex-gravy train. You thought I was crazy. Well, 10 games in an injury-riddled year where he doesn't look like himself. He's playing with one or two groin injuries. They're attacking him like a regular corner. How's my crazy statement a year ago? Does it sound so crazy now, Cameron Wolf?
Yeah, no, I think you were right. You know, I think the reality is everything was going to be based on the quarterback. And so you're seeing the quarterback be the guy that I know you've long thought that he could be, that the Dolphins have long thought that he could be.
Well, no, at the Dolphins front office long thought he could be, not the owner, not the former coach.
Correct. Correct. The Dolphins, at least for sure when they drafted him, thought that if overall he could be this guy. And when you see this guy become that, it allows you to be aggressive. It allows you to pull the trigger on Bradley Chubb and give up what you give up to get him. It allows you to see the fruition of Tyreek and Jalen Waddle being together, all you could see. It allows your head coach to be as creative and effective as he has. So all of that is based on you being essentially, although it may have taken a couple of years for some people, proven right at the quarterback spot. But yeah, Chris Greer, I'd say, you know, I talked about it on air earlier this week. The Laremy Tunsil trade started all of this.
True.
And that was one of the best trades that we have had, you know, seen in the NFL in probably
since Emmitt Smith.
I don't know.
Since years, Emmitt, I'm old. Since
that's what I'm about to say. Emmitt I'm not Smith. As old, so I don't want to. You know,
I'm giving you the ammunition. Mike Lynn, Jimmy Johnson, Herschel Walker to Minnesota for all those picks, and he got Emmitt, and he got God, I forgot what players came out of it besides Emmitt Smith exactly. Yeah, please look it up for me. But he got that Herschel Walker trade. You know, it's wow. That's the last trade, because I don't know what Ditka got for Ricky Williams. I mean, what they got for Ricky Williams.
Right.
When Ditka traded for Ricky's rights, I don't know what they did.
I know that Ricky went initially for all of the picks.
And a second rounder the following year, but I don't know what they got with all those picks. But I know that Jimmy got like, I want to say he got Emmitt. I think he might have gotten the safety, if I remember correctly. I'm trying to remember the damn safety's name that was all world of theirs. I think it was in those picks. He's looking it up now.
Yeah.
But I want to say since the Jimmy trade for Herschel Walker, this is the next biggest best trade out of all of that one.
All right.
We got the answer. Hold on.
All right, so he used them over the succeeding years. The picks acquired in those were then used to draft players such as Emmitt Smith, Darren Woodson, Russell Maryland.
Yeah. Darren Woodson, huh?
Darren Woodson is not just any old safety.
Right, no, and Russell Maryland. And Russell Maryland. That's the third one that I forgot.
Heck of a haul. And so, obviously, the Dolphins didn't exactly get all the four guys, you know, Tyreek, Jalen Waddle, Bradley Chubb, Javon Holland are the four that came from the Laremy Tunsil deal. Obviously, they had to make several other trades to get those guys, but essentially the initial trade set the path for them to get these guys, which are all going to be four core players there. And so Yeah, Chris Greer, you know, when a lot of people had questions on should he be out with Flores, has done a really good job over the last year, you know, establishing this core, not only for 2022, but for years and years to come. And so I think Dolphins fans should be very happy about where the state is for their team, not only for a chance to win a division this year, but also to be one of these teams we talk about for the next, you know, 5 to 10 years.
By the way, Tua's a hell of a lot happier than you and I are after Thanksgiving because he saw that Von Miller injury. Knowing his ass, he's not like, you know, he's like,
he probably didn't see it.
He probably feels bad for the guy knowing him because he's such a good dude. But deep down inside, he's got to go, all right, bro, I don't got to worry about that dude.
So Von hasn't been ruled out for the season yet.
No, but it sounds pretty bad according to Rap Sheet.
So yeah, Rappaport and Schefter both reported that he didn't tear his ACL, but that it looks like he's probably going to have to miss much, if not the rest of the regular season. And then it's probably a January stretch run injury if, you know, all things go well. So he's not out yet, but obviously it's a big blow for them as they try to win this AFC East.
Dude, if he's got a tear in the LCL and he needs surgery one way or another, here's the thing that I was thinking. And again, this is the cynical one in me. This is why I've been thinking the whole Byron Jones is doing business with the Dolphins. Here we go. Here's where business sets in, doggy. He's got a one-year deal, correct? Correct?
Vaughn?
Yeah, right? Is it
No, he's got a six-year deal. He signed a six-year deal.
Oh, so then he's fine.
Yeah, yeah. He's got three guaranteed. Six-year deal with three guarantees. Fine. So he's there regardless.
So he can play it out. Okay. So if it was a one-year deal, then he would have to go to surgery right away to save his ass for next year. But because he's got a guaranteed deal, then it's up to the Bills now to help him with the gamble because they could ruin him for next year also. So they've got to be very careful how they handle this one, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, they do. It's going to be interesting down the stretch because they've got a bunch of injuries, you know, and Vaughn is not only huge for them on the field. I think he has 8 or 8.5 sacks. He's your top pass rusher, obviously.
Yeah.
But off the field, too, they brought him in to be that guy for this time of year. Right. Like, yeah, he's been really productive, September, October, November, but they brought him in with the same mind that the Rams had December, January, February. You give us that push. You've been here. You won multiple titles. You won a Super Bowl MVP. Help our young guys when it gets hard in December, January, and February over the punch. And so if they miss him for most of December, how does that affect that defense? I think it's a very, very significant injury. I said it yesterday. Some people argued with me on Twitter. I think he's the most significant player on that team outside of Josh Allen.
Oh, so, hell yeah. Who the hell can argue that?
Some people say Stephon Diggs is more significant than him. And I could see it.
That's a good argument.
But to me, Josh is the guy on offense and Vaughn is the guy on defense. And you have to have one guy on each side of the ball. Like Stephon is obviously number two on offense and a huge part of it. But to me, if they lost Stephon for a time, you still have Gabe Davis. You still can make it work without Vaughn. You know, and all he does from a leadership standpoint, that's going to be tough.
Yeah, I know. But the Diggs run is a good one. I didn't think about that.
Trust me, they don't want to lose either one.
No, but that was a good argument there because while I like the other two, he's just at another level, bro. Diggs is, come on, man.
Saw him this past game. I mean, Jesus, like, even when he doesn't put up the crazy numbers, like he didn't put up 100.
But they're impactful plays.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Whenever you need him, he comes in clutch. He has a knack for that his whole career.
Yeah, yeah. The good thing is, you know, it's what I've been telling, you know, remember, we're a scarred bunch down here. Because it's two decades. It's like Detroit fans. It's like, you know, any other fan base, Orlando Magic fans or something. You know, we're tortured children, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we always think that the other shoe's going to fall and because that's what's been the case. But they've never had a franchise quarterback since Marino. All the other guys they've always had are guys like the guy you watched yesterday in Jared Goff that you're hoping that he can make a play or two. And if everything goes well, this, that. But, you know, he's not the guy. And I'm trying to tell the Dolphin Nation. So back me up here if you believe what I believe here.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they're going to win all the games or anything. I'm just saying they can beat anybody on their schedule. Period. Yeah. I don't care who it is or where it is. San Fran, Chargers, Bills. I don't care. I'm not telling you they're winning all these games. I'm just saying Dolphin fans should go into all those games with the confidence that they can compete and possibly win those games.
Yeah, there's nobody that's too big for them. Like, I think we talked about this last year when they played. I think it was last year when they played the Chiefs, right?
Right.
And Tua came back in the second half and he made it close, but the game really wasn't close. They blew him out in the first half. I'm like, this team wasn't close enough to the Chiefs talent-wise that I felt at any point they were going to beat the Chiefs, right? The Chiefs, to me, are probably, you know, you could argue either the Chiefs or maybe the Eagles. I probably wouldn't count the Bills in there. Whoever you consider as the biggest quote-unquote challenge to the Super Bowl right now, you match them against the Dolphins right now, yeah, the Chiefs will probably get 3 or 4 points in an even sight favorite, maybe 5, but they shouldn't be afraid of them. None of those teams are too big or too talented for the Dolphins, you know, on any given Sunday. Like, yeah, Patrick Mahomes is this, but the Dolphins feel pretty good about their quarterback, and they feel pretty good about their offensive line, their run game, and their defense in certain aspects. And so I think that Dolphins fans should feel pretty good going down the stretch and have some fun. I think this team will make the playoffs, and, you know, then we'll see what happens from there.
I know now's not the time or the place for it, so I doubt you've been dabbling in this subject because it's not important, really, but it's intriguing. And so that's why I bring it up to you, because I haven't dabbled in it. I probably will once I go, God, thank God I get to go back to the combine. I haven't been there in 4 years, bro. It was the last time. Last 3 years, I haven't been to the combine, and it's like it was like a 20-year run, and then like all of a sudden, you know, 3 years of not going. But I'm looking forward to going this year, obviously, and getting back to, you know, mingling with the NFL folks, and I'm sure I'll do some of it either at the Senior Bowl or the East West. How much has the Dolphins' success hurt Brian Flores? Because the development of Tua, the development of the offense, which is where he struggled mightily overall. We could talk about all the other issues, whether his lack of one-on-one skills and those kind of things that happen also that are there. But the fact that these guys made such a quick turnaround on offense, and that the quarterback is playing at such a significantly high level compared to anything that he did in the first 2 years under Brian Flores, I wonder how much this has hurt him behind the scenes. Forget about the lawsuit and forget about any of that. Just pure X's and O's.
It's an interesting question. I think the thing is, I think Brian Flores is going to have to go over a lot of hurdles to be a head coach again.
He'll never get that. He's done with that.
But I think the thing, if he's not a head coach, is if he's a defensive coordinator, it won't necessarily hurt him, because his big issue on the field, like strictly on the field, is he could not figure out a way to fix the offense. The offensive coordinators, he couldn't find the guys to run the offense. He couldn't find a way to get the most out of the offensive line. He couldn't find a way to get the most out of his quarterback. Obviously, his relationship with his quarterback wasn't good. So everything on the offensive side of the ball did not go well for Brian Flores, right? But the defense, we have to say, was pretty good under him.
Yes.
You know, and so his best path is what he's doing now, being a linebackers coach, maybe eventually becoming a defensive coordinator somewhere. But I think his limitation will always be on the head coach side. One, some of the issues he had here at the end and his relationship building, his personal, but also, can we trust this dude to build an offense?
Right.
And like you said, you clearly brought in a guy like Mike McDaniel who knows how to build an offense, and he did it instantly. And so it's showing you the difference on coaches who can build an offense or identify coaches, because you don't always have to be an offense coach. It could be a defensive coach who's really good at identifying offensive coaches to lead the offense he wants. Flores was not good at that. And so I don't think it impacts him as a ability to get the defensive coordinator job, but I think it makes his path to a head coach job that much harder, if there even was a path before.
By the way, it's at least understandable, because Adam Gase was an offensive guy and he couldn't get his offense going.
The defense, right?
No, he couldn't get his offense going either at times. That first year, he got Ajayi and everything went well. But after that, it all fell apart on him on offense. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's a, and by the way, the same things that that this man Flo suffered from. So did Joe Philbin, by the way. Yeah. Two different ways of doing it, but both lacked people's skills, actually.
Right.
You know what I mean? One was maybe too abrasive in his way, and the other one just didn't know how to communicate whatsoever with people. You know what I mean? So it was like both oddities in the way they did it. And so it's nothing new what Flores experienced. We've seen this tons of times. Lots of guys are exceptional coordinators, and they suck as head coaches.
Yep.
You know, Wade Phillips, bro. One of the greatest defensive minds ever.
Awesome mind.
Do you want him as your head coach ever?
No.
Never.
Probably not.
Never.
Yeah.
Never, but you'll welcome him with open arms as your defensive coordinator.
He's an awesome defensive coordinator. And an awesome guy, too.
Awesome human being, too, right?
Yeah.
Awesome human being. But it never worked out as a head coach.
Same for Dick LeBeau. Dick LeBeau's in the same
thing.
Some guys are really good at their side of the ball. It's so hard. That's why, like, I think people get caught up when it's hiring cycle about what somebody ranked as a coordinator on this sort of thing. I still remember Mike Vrabel, who I think is one of the best 6 or 7 coaches in the league.
Easy.
He was 30. He had the 32nd ranked defense as a Texans in his lone year as an offensive coordinator. The Titans hired him as their head coach. People were like, how could you hire the person with the worst defense of football? Because it's not just about calling the defensive plays or calling that. It's about everything else, your ability to lead, your ability to manage.
Right.
And so, I think Mike McDaniel – We're only 10, 11 games in. I'm really interested to see this stretch down the way. This Texans game, they should win, but they got to be careful because this is the quintessential trap game, because they're so much more talented than the Texans. They're so much more, you know, confident, better, but the Texans are throwing out this backup quarterback who hasn't played all year, who, you know, maybe you get lightning in a bottle, and how do you respond to that? But if they get past this game like we expect, even if it's a little uglier than it should be, you got a 6-game stretch where I think we're going to really learn a lot about this team, Mike McDaniel, Josh Boyer, the defensive coordinator. And if they can show what they've been showing over the first half of the season, then I think this is the core for you to believe in for a very long time. But there's a lot of games coming up that I think they're going to test them, starting in San Fran next week.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt that stretch is going to be awesome. And by the way, it's a nice primer for the playoffs.
Absolutely.
That's instead of playing.
Like I said, they shouldn't be afraid.
Yeah.
They shouldn't be afraid. It's going to be a challenge.
Right.
But they shouldn't be afraid because they stack up with all of these other teams, even if it's difficult. They stack up.
And I got to tell you something. While some people might be concerned about a letdown or something, I don't know, dude. Maybe it's just a homer approach on my part. But I think this winning stuff is so new to them and so refreshing to them. And I think the 3-game losing streak was the wake-up call of appreciation.
Yeah.
That they're like, this is life without this guy, and we couldn't get by it. Let's appreciate this, and let's take advantage. And I think when, you know, they were talking about, I think Tua said it yesterday, that they were chomping at the bit to get back and all that stuff. I believe that's the case from those guys, because I think they're excited about winning and kind of, and they're still in that mode where people aren't convinced of them. So they haven't been annoyed at anything yet. That's the cool thing for them too. They're not like Kansas City. Like, we're already annoyed in Kansas City now. Instead of Buffalo, we've kind of swung a little over to Kansas City now with our belief, right? That's kind of what it is. Buffalo
they're healthier. They've been playing a lot better,
right?
And so
right.
I've counted Buffalo out, by the way. But before it was Buffalo is the hot favorite. And, you know, Kansas City is second. Now I think it's been Kansas City's heavy first, and then Buffalo's, you know, in the mix with the other teams, Miami,
right?
You know, Baltimore, right. Cincinnati, Tennessee, all that stuff.
Right. So Miami hasn't been annoyed at anything. And so I think they kind of also, they can't get a big head, because Tua's, they're still saying, oh, well, Tua, it's the coordinator, it's the receivers, it's, you put in another quarterback and he would have the same. So there's nothing of that. I think there's still some hunger on this team. So I think you're going to see a performance. All right, so we'll wrap it up with this. Who's the second running back on Sunday? Because it's not going to be Mostert. Come on, let's go. We know he's out.
So Mostert actually was suited up in practice today, but I do get the feel that they're going to be careful with him this week. rest them, especially, like I said, the team won't say this, but you're playing the Texans. You don't ideally need him. If he's if this is a playoff game and he's like, hey, I'd suit up. If it's a playoff game, it's not a playoff game.
Right.
And so I ruled out yet. He did technically suit up for Friday practice, but I would probably say that Salvin Ahmed is the second running back there. But I do think that both he and Miles would both be active if Raheem can't go.
Yeah, exactly. And plus, he's injury prone, something else they won't tell you. So you've got to be a little extra careful. He's coming off a knee injury. By the way, is it the same injury? Is it the same knee?
I do not know. I do not know.
Yeah. That's the thing. All right. Follow him on Twitter at Cameron Wolf and catch his exceptional work as always on the NFL Network. Cam, enjoy the weekend, my friend. We'll catch up next week.
We'll do. Get another turkey sandwich for you, my man.
You know it, baby. Tonight, leftovers.
Yes, later. Indeed.
You got it.
All right, man.
Be good. There you go, Cameron Wolf. You know I'm going to have some leftovers. We did bring leftovers home, right? We did, right? Okay. I'm looking over at my wife's here. So I just had to look over like, we did, right? We got them. I know we brought some. Did we bring the rice and the beans too? Oh, God. Those rice and beans were off the hook, man. Off the hook. Joe Shad there yet? Send his slow ass a text. Huh? Yeah. Oh, we have unleashed the wolf pack.